In the meantime, let's be proceeding with our agenda. Minister, Deputy Minister, colleagues, members of the committee, officials, the Commissioner, Chairperson, PSC, you are all welcome. We have a long agenda today. We'll try to move a bit faster. The meeting is officially open. Item two, apologies. Okay, Honorable Duazan, attending strategy. Who's Honorable Nesso? Honorable Nesso is here, but later she will also go to basic education. Welcome, Honorable Father. You want to leave, who's? We met you last week, but there was a young man there who was was firing. Then
I think you didn't even know.
No, you remember I came late there. So what Honorable Mbao did was to say you must hit first, then you will come later. The damage, we'll do a damage control. Okay, thank you very much. I will also leave around 13 hours, somewhere quarter to one, with the chairman of the Public Service Commission. The Deputy Speaker is scheduled a meeting that starts at half past 11 for chairpersons of committees that to oversight on institutions that support democracy, the old Qatar's market. We'll have to go in there and then we'll bring the report when we come back in October as to what we'll have discussed. Okay, let's go right away to item three, briefing by PSC on their fourth quarter's performance of 2017-18 financial year and the first quarter performance of 2018-2019 financial year. Commissioner, welcome with your DG. You can present. Just, as you can see, we've got a long agenda. We want to finish the meeting with everybody here. Just try by all means to go into the issues, not read every item in the report. Just try to spend time with these two quarter reports here. That said, who's presenting the DG? Governor Mampiso. Before that, the doctor, Honorable Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Because I'm accompanying my chief, I just thought that I should say a few words. That as we present, you will all realize As we present, you will all realize that we have met almost all of our targets in the fourth quarter. And for those targets that have not been met, and I'm not just talking about the people of the Service Commission, and for those targets that were not met, we have, some of them we have achieved or met them in the first quarter of the 2018-2019 election. But I'd also like just to remind us that today we remember and commemorate the life and times of David Bantubiko, who died 41 years ago today under very brutal circumstances. And as we do our work in the public service, that we remember those that have died for us to be able to sit here in a parliament of the people that is non-racial, but also a parliament that is expected to look into the hopes and aspirations of our people, and as you hold us accountable, that accountability takes into account those that would have paid the supreme price for us to represent our people in the way that we do. But I'd also like to take this opportunity just to speak to an issue that has made headlines over weeks, and unfortunately, we also have been a little wishy-washy in the way that we've communicated it. almost at times conflicting one another on the alleged 20,000 job retrenchment. And I want to state it categorically here in front of members of the portfolio committee to whom I am accountable to, that there is no 30,000 reduction. There is no such plan. At least not from the Department of Public Service and Administration, who are responsible for human resource management and development and evaluation in public service. That there is no truth to a newspaper article that was initially carried by the Mail and Guardian, but other media houses then piggybacked on an article that was devoid of all truth. What you should also understand is that we sit with a huge wage bill. And the wage bill, in my view, does not necessarily mean that the fact that the wage bill is high is an indication that we have more people than we require. We actually do not have more people than we require. We have people that sit in positions where we would need to reconfigure the job that individuals hold. But just also, it's becoming a little bit impossible to talk to
the minister. You can report to the minister so that we have our colleagues. Can you provide one seat?
Ministro da Serviço Público e Administração.
Next to her is the Deputy Minister of Public Service Administration, Dr. Mashaka.
E aqui presente a Dra. Mashaka, que é a Vice-Ministra do Serviço Público, do Ministério do Serviço Público e Administração.
She says next to the Deputy Minister is the member of the committee, Honorable D. Costa.
E aqui ao lado é o Sr. D. Costa, que é membro da comissão.
Next to Honorable Costa is the member of the committee. Mr. S.B. Ntombela.
E a seguir o Sr. L.B. Ntombela, que é o membro da comissão.
Next to Ntombela is the member of the committee, Ms. D. Van der Waal.
E a seguir é a senhora Van der Waal, que é membro da comissão.
Next to Ms. Van der Waal is also the member of the committee, Honorable S.C. Motau.
Lá da senhora Van der Waal é o senhor Motau, que é membro da comissão.
Next to Honorable Tau is another member of the committee, Honorable S.C. Mwale.
Ao lado, a sua excelência S.P. Mugabe, que é membro da comissão.
Next to Mr. Mugabe is another member of the committee, Ms. L.D. Miso.
Senhor L.D. Miso, que é membro da comissão também.
Then, the member at my far right, is Ms. W.S. Nivot Trishan.
W.S. Trishan, que é também membro da comissão.
Those are the members of the committee who are a multi-party complement seated here.
São membros da comissão para multipartidade.
Then we have our officials coming from parliament, and then those who are the minister, but also present is the chairperson.
E os outros são oficiais que vêm do parlamento, e também está presente a senhora.
Yeah, the chairperson of the committee, that is
okay. Yeah. E que o senhor presidente da comissão.
Of the, did I say committee?
Yeah.
No. I've promoted you to be honest. Maybe next year you're coming. You can come and retire here. Demotion. No. Demotion to come. Remember your account to us. Please come and join. Yeah, come and join us next year. Okay, thanks, Suzanne. And then he has got his team, the DGs, and also the DG from the minister.
Since I saw the team, okay, from the minister.
Let me ask the vice chairperson of the committee, Mr. Rafael Lorenco Shande, to introduce members of the delegation, our colleagues from Mozambique. You are welcome, Chairperson.
Obrigado. Muito bom dia.
Muito obrigado.
Thank you very much.
Antes de tudo, as nossas sinceras desculpas por esse grande atraso que está perturbando o decurso da vossa reunião.
Firstly, I'd like to apologize for our delay and this disturbing your discussion here.
Tivemos alguns problemas organizacionais.
We had some organizational problems.
Por isso, mais uma vez, as minhas sinceras desculpas.
Once again, I apologize.
É com muita honra que estamos aqui para participar nesse vosso encontro, mas antes também gostaria de apresentar os meus colegas.
It is an honor to be here with you in this meeting, and before I'd like to introduce the members of our committee.
Para além dos deputados, está conosco o nosso cônsul de Moçambique na cidade de Cape Town e um assistente da comissão.
Alongside with the committee, we have the general consul of Mozambique in Cape Town and also an assistant.
My name is Christophe Nchemo. I'm the consul general of Mozambique here in Cape Town.
You are welcome.
Members of the committee, Freitas Tequila.
Beatriz Chaguala, member of the commission.
Beatriz Chaguala, member of the committee.
Alves Zita, member of the commission.
Alves Zita, member of the committee.
My name is Gemma Souza, member of the committee. Thank you.
Sebastião da Costa, member of the committee.
Sebastião da Costa, member of the committee.
Zezinho Ricardo José, member of the commission.
Zezinho Ricardo José, member of the committee.
Obrigado. Meu nome é Rafael Lourenço Xande, vice-presidente da Comissão de Administração Pública e Poder Local. Obrigado.
My name is Rafael Lourenço Xande, vice-chairperson of the Committee of Public Administration and Local Power.
Com a permissão, o nosso grande objetivo de virmos à África do Sul é para aprendermos do Parlamento Sul-Africano sobre a governação local, descentralização dos órgãos de governação local, o seu relacionamento entre os governos locais e o governo nacional.
Our objective of our visit here in the South African Parliament is to learn from you about local government, decentralization of the local government, or the relation between the different spheres of the government.
Em relação à governação local, também gostaríamos de aprender da África do Sul a gestão das finanças provinciais, finanças autárquicas ou finanças geridas pelos municípios.
Regarding the local government, we would like to learn about financial management regarding the municipalities or local governments.
Nós, como Moçambique, somos uma democracia muito jovem, mas a democracia da África do Sul é mais fortificada, mais praticada.
Moçambique has a younger democracy, but South African democracy is stronger and more consolidated.
Em termos de descentralização, nós começamos em 1998 com a criação de 23 municípios e estamos a continuar.
Regarding decentralization, we started in 1998 with 23 municipalities and we're still in progress.
Em relação ao método de eleição dos presidentes de conselhos municipais, este ano nós vamos fazer uma mudança usando o método de cabeça de lista, lista dos partidos políticos que vão participar nas eleições municipais.
Regarding the method of election in the municipal council, we are changing the method to the head of the list. We're changing the way the election will will be from then on.
Antes eram candidatos singulares dos partidos, mas a partir deste ano outubro vamos usar a lista dos partidos.
Before used to be a singular candidate of the party, but from the now on we will start with a list of the parties, political parties.
Próximo ano vamos fazer a eleição dos governadores provinciais, também usando as listas de partidos políticos.
Next year we will start with the election of the provincial governor, which is a premier in South Africa, and using the list of the political parties.
E em 2024 vamos usar a mesma metodologia para a eleição dos administradores distritais.
And from 2024 we'll use the same method to vote the municipal administrators. Local administrator, which is a digital administrator.
Por isso, como nós sabemos que a África do Sul tem uma boa experiência na eleição de governadores provinciais, viemos aprender como o governo da África do Sul.
We know that South Africa has a good experience in electing provincial governments, so that's why we came to learn with you.
Resumidamente, isto, muito obrigado pela vossa atenção.
In short, this is the end of our visit. Thanks for your attention.
Obrigado. My name is Joe Masangaranya. My grandparents originally come from the district of Gaza in Bijana. My family is still there. So later were divided by the Kruger National Park. The western part of Kruger National Park became South Africa. The east Mozambique. So my people are around Bangladesh, if you know Bangladesh. Yes, that's where I originally come from. Yeah. Before South Africa was divided by Ula.
Going to the bush, going to Gaza. E a minha família ainda continua.
We'll quickly take 2 minutes to take a group photo on the steps and then come back for the minister to proceed. We'll minister to take a group photo.
Terá um intervalo de 2 minutos para tirarmos uma foto familiar aí fora e depois regressamos.
Ok.
Passei meu braço, meu braço. Dá-me creme.
Yeah.
For the image
Thank you very much, Honorable. delegation came into the meeting, the Minister of Public Service Administration, Honorable Bayanda Thosa, was making not necessarily a presentation, but an introduction before the PSD could make a presentation. So she was on an item on some stories around in regard to allegation of retrenchment, which is neither here nor there, but she was clarifying it as an honorable minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. I hope you're not going to start speaking in Shanghai because brothers are here to speak.
We will switch to Portuguese, Shaman, and English. But you said you've got the Portuguese blood for the blood. Okay, honorable minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. As young freedom fighters, some of us were hosted graciously by the people of Mozambique. We lived in Matola, in Riverside, in Jardim, and later in Nampula after the Gonathi Accord. So we're very familiar with the people of the country and the warmth of the people of Mozambique. Chairperson, I was still talking about the 30,000 people that are said to be facing retrenchment in the public service, and I categorically said that there is no truth to that statement or assertion. What we should remember is that we had gone over as the mandate committee by 30.2 billion. The mandate that had initially, well, the budget that had initially been conferred to the department by the National Treasury. Now that goes with a lot of throwing back activity that we need to be putting in place to make sure that we recoup or we save in different instances so that we can be able to pay back the 30.2 billion and the 30.2 billion that we do not have. And this department is responsible for that, working in concert with the National Treasury. We have to find this money. It will not be easy to find this money, but we're looking at quite a few areas. And one of the areas is the compensation of employee expenditure item, but not the only area of clawing back. I am on record as having said that the national, well, the budget on compensation of employees is very high. But I'm also on record as saying I have no proof as I sit here and as I did not a few months ago that the public service is necessarily diligent. What I do know for a fact is that in certain areas we would have more people than we actually require. But in a lot more areas, we need people that we do not have. And all of that would have to take a few things into account. If we're looking at the compensation of employee expenditure item, we would need to retrain and upskill people to occupy positions that are critical to the running of the state, including, amongst others, the police, where there is a huge, huge backlog and shortage, the health sector, where there's a huge backlog and shortage of clinicians, nurses, and all of that. The education sector, where there are certain critical skills that have been identified that are in short supply. So there are a host of areas, a whole host of areas where we still find ourselves short of people, and those are the most critical skills for us to enable us to be able to deliver on expectations, aspirations, and hopes of our people. So right now, nothing is before me that says we have a bloated public service, but nothing, if anything, is before me that says we need to shed jobs. What I know for a fact is that we need to be upskilling, we need to be retraining, we need to be redeploying to areas where the most people are needed in terms of the critical skills that we would have identified. We'd also have to undergo an exercise to determine what the skills gap in the public service are. And that exercise will be embarked upon jointly with the Public Service Commission, it will be with the National School of Government, the DPSA, but it will also include the PCs who have done a bit of work in this regard. Once we do a skills audit, we'll then be able to determine what the gaps are. And training will commence on the basis of those gaps that would have been identified and scientifically determined through a proper exercise that will be done by the various institutions that I have spoken to. So we're not going to start talking about letting people go if there is going to be such an exercise, which I categorically say would not be there. But it would be foolhardy of us to talk about retrenchment when we do not even have a scientific evidence before us that says here are the skills shortages and therefore these are the type of people you need and the numbers of those people that you need. Do you have them in the system? Yes or no. If you don't, who are you going to upskill, who are you going to retrain, and who are you going to redeploy? Just by way of example, in the Department of Public Service Administration, we had a medical doctor working. Of course, he's now left the department. But it's just but one example of the things that I'm talking about. We have people in the department that possess certain skills that are not required in that particular department or that particular branch or unit in which they work. So the exercise is much broader than looking at 30,000 people, which is a fictional number, but looking at what establishments need for it to be able to deliver valuable services to our people. We're also looking at reviving the remuneration framework to take into account the way that our people are paid, but also how we bring entrants into, how we pay new entrants into the civil service. We also have spoken about looking at early retirement and ensuring that for those who want to take early retirement, they will not be coerced into taking early retirement, but if they wish to do that, we need to remove the penalties that are attached to early retirement. We also need to look at the employee and note well, employee, not employer, employee-initiated severance package, which both exercises are going to cost us a bit of money, but in the long run, the net effect is that we will be saving huge amounts of money if these packages that are available are taken up by our people. What you must also realize is that as we talk early retirement and employee-initiated severance package, we need to start building scenarios, modeling, and budgeting for those strategies. And this is what the Treasury has done. The Treasury has not said we are going to retrench because they have no authority to say we are going to retrench, but they have a responsibility that if we're looking at ways of having the runaway wage bill, that they do deliver or they do initiate certain exercises that will inform us on how much each scenario is going to cost, model it and share it with us. We are also looking at the ICT expenditure budget item, which we think because there has been a lapse in consolidating and having an integrated approach towards ICT procurement, it has become very difficult for us to continue that expenditure or cost item within government. We are in the process of revising our public service ICT policy in line with the Public Service Act and also the PEM Act, which gives the department the responsibility and authority over ICT policy within the public service. But the PEM Act goes beyond the public service and also caters for ICT policy within the public sector, so it goes beyond that. So I am very confident that once we finalize this exercise, we'll be able to draw on the strength of our purchasing power to ensure that we buy goods and services from the private sector at a cost that is much lower than what we are paying to do. But that will also help us to have good data that assists us in our evidence-based planning processes, which we hope to introduce in good time. That will ensure that we have good plans in place that are evidence-based. So, Chairperson, I just wanted to take the issue of the 30,000 retrenchment lie that has been peddled over time, that there is no such a thing, but there are measures from the department and bringing in other stakeholders from other departments to work with us in ensuring that we minimize the wage bill, but we bring in, as people leave the system, we are not going to, we are not going to make post redundant necessary, but we are going to bring in younger people into the establishment that would obviously come in cheaper than older people that are currently in the position. For instance, if you have someone that sits at an assistant director level, having been in the establishment for about 12, 15 years, obviously that person costs the state a lot of money in terms of benefits and in terms of salary. But if you bring in a younger person, because we also have to deal with the huge youth unemployment in the country, we have to look at bringing in younger people who are obviously going to be much cheaper because they come in at entry level. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. I think that's quite helpful to make that clarity. Also, you should make sure that there is coordination between yourselves, Presidency, and Treasury. Yes. Because sometimes Presidency talks of reconfiguring the public service. You know, usage of words or concepts can send a particular meaning somewhere else. Sometimes Treasury uses some words which, so, and you are the line function minister. So when those departments and offices make statements, they should craft them very carefully and make sure that they talk to the line minister. Because if you say reconfigure, to us it means something very serious. But if you clarify that there's no retrenchment, but there will be a very voluntary severance package, and clarify it what it means. I know when I was in the Limpopo provincial government, we once had around 2000 dealt with the issue of voluntary severance, and it was properly managed. And what does it mean? Because on the other hand, we have got lots of vacant posts across all the departments, which have to be filled. So people get confused that we are retrenched. Yes, there are thousands of vacant posts. And in the era in which we are, where there are not much opportunities for jobs, even those who are employed in the public service start to be afraid and say, what's going to happen to us? So I think that clarity is quite very important. Make such kind of statements more and more in the public domain, and you have met the unions at least, because you saw the statement that the unions made after the Mail and Guardian article. Really, it was not a very good statement. So I think we are thankful for that clarity. And also last week, the Deputy Minister, through oral questions, tried to clarify that aspect of allocation of 30,000 retrenchment. Honorable Panelwan and Honorable Ndao Kasim, both start today. Last week there was a pattern. So today Kasim speaks last.
Yes.
Honorable
Panelwan. In the issues of not age.
Okay.
Chair, well, let's also echo the thanks of the Minister for explaining this. But indeed, between the President, the Deputy Minister, the Minister, Treasury, whoever, there's been a lot of confusion. And I sincerely thank the Minister for acknowledging that we still have to go and find the 30-odd billion because we don't have it. If you look at all the personal income tax collected in our country, it is not nowhere near enough to actually cover this government wage bill. So what are we going to do? Are we going to raise taxes? Because if you don't raise tax, you're not going to get this money. Because the savings that the minister refers to is a long-term thing. It's not going to happen in 3 months or 6 months. And with all due respect, I understand that we're not going to retrench, but also severance packages takes a lot of money. Yes, in the long term it might save you money, but we technically have announced in a recession at the moment. So surveillance packages, if we don't even have a clue who would take it, how much it's going to cost, it's also quite a burden on government wage bill. And I don't think we must ever say this in a way that it sounds like you're now being penalised for having experience and turning to a certain age and then getting cheap labour, because there's also the perception out there that we're now going to chase away everybody of 60 and over because they're now being penalised for reaching that health, which is not retirement age really, and getting in young people because they know less, they'll be cheaper. That could also have a very negative effect on performance, and as we know, government is not performing well in many areas. And then, Chairperson, lastly, I would also then ask the Minister, and I read a statement on the issues of that we've been driving for a very long time in the offices of ministers that are exceeding what the ministerial handbook is prescribing. That's where the cost saving should start. And then, of course, the ministerial handbook is now lying and gathering dust, I think, at the on the president's desk, because that's where the cost-effective measures should start. It's in the ministerial handbook. So can we just be updated on that as well?
Thanks, Honourable Fanagot. Honourable Mutang.
Thank you, Chair. Minister, I think you have a really, really poison shot. It's a very difficult one. As my colleague has said, at this time of recession, you have to do a balancing act. Indeed, I agree, we have to reskill and shift people around. If you look at the statistics about police, 62,000 missing when we have gaps here and there. My point is this, and I take everything that my colleague has said. Do we have timelines? Because something needs to be seen to be done. We need to be saying, by this end, by this time, we will have done this. By this time, we will have done that. So that we give, again, those people out there, the public servants who are anxious about their futures, some sense of where things are going, but also giving the nation a sense of direction as to where the money is going to come from, how it's going to be done, and how this reskilling is going to happen.
Thanks, Honorable Kasey.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've mostly been covered, so I'm not going to repeat what's been said or asked. I'm just a bit concerned, Chair, and I'm going to express my concerns in the following matter. Sometimes, we all know that we're in an election year. That affects politics, it affects government, it affects decisions that are taken every year in Parliament. My concern is that sometimes we don't want to deal with the difficult issues as directly as possible because of the possible electoral consequences. And I raise that as a concern. I'm not going to say anything beyond that. But what I do want to say is that we keep, you know, saying we're going to save this way, we're going to save that way. And one of the ways that the minister says is, well, you know, we're going to have to utilize evidence-based policy making. Well, the reality, Chair, through you, Chair, to the minister, is that just last week we had Statistics South Africa before us, who are under-budgeted, whose indicators and reports are being compromised. We're relying on evidence-based policy making. The problem is, Statistics South Africa, which should be the repository of the information that should be used for our evidence-based policy making, is at risk. And the rise in public sector wage bill, the previous finance minister estimated to reach 650 billion rand by 2020, is starting to crowd out other expenditure items like StatsSA and like other vital spending priorities that we are supposedly relying on. So I want to raise that as a concern, Chair. I know that every single department needs money, every single department, and really it's not that it's not valid, but at some point Cabinet needs to be able to decide this is what we prioritize in going forward, this is how it's going to be done. And Parliament needs to make a decision on that, because what I expect to happen is we're going to get to the adjustment budget process. It's not going to be an easy process because of the different shortfalls that exist. We're then going to get to the next budget where these kinds of expenditure items, whether it's the public sector wage bill, whether it is servicing our debt levels as a country is starting to encroach on vital spending priorities that are critical to maintaining social stability within our country. And that is where we can start to run into a bit of a problem as a nation. And therefore, I want to echo Honorable Matao's questions around timelines, certainty. And I think at this point, certainty is what the entire nation and potential investors are looking for. What exactly are we doing? When are we doing it? Mixed messages and sometimes trying to walk back that, or even the media sometimes, you know, reporting sensationally doesn't assist in that regard. And we need to just be straightforward. This is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. And for our future planning as well.
Thank you, Honorable Kasim, Honorable Nore, Honorable Kosa, Honorable Tome.
Thank you, Chair. Greetings to everyone. Thank you, Minister, for the clarity in the matter. When we saw that article, all of us were panicking. But my worry, Minister, is some contradictions. Because what you have explained to us now is clear to everyone. And it brings back hope. Even if our people hear this, they'll be much relieved. But the contradictions between your department and the presidency. I remember when the Deputy President was answering questions in the House last week, he said something quite different. It was clear that he is for retrenchment in the public service. I remember he even mentioned issues of huge money is going towards compensation of employees, something that should not be allowed to go on and on. I mean, it was clear that he's saying there will be retrenchment. But what you are giving to us is quite clear and contradicting that. My concern is, if that is not managed, it will continue to create confusion to our people. Because, you see, when you speak of retrenchment, it's a sensitive matter. It's important that we handle it in one voice with the necessary care. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Honorable Costa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning, everyone, and welcome to our colleagues from Mozambique. Chairperson, I first want to start by thanking the Minister for clarifying the issue of the retrenchment, because it has been making headlines out there. I think she is always available for us to check if sometimes we happen to be confused with the remarks that are being made out there. The minister is the one who is heading the department, and in that regard, we need to when we want to check something, let's engage with her, and she will clarify us. And she has done it today, and she will keep doing that. I also think, Chairperson, it is correct for the minister to come up with a plan. You cannot just be seated and not coming up with plans going forward. It is correct that, yes, she must come up with plans. We agree and disagree where possible, but we need not maybe think as if coming up with plans is to penalize certain age groupings. I don't believe in that the penalizing of certain age groupings. It is just a plan that is going to manage all these things that she has been talking about going forward. I also want to indicate, Chairperson, that we'll always have elections. We'll have elections because there was a democratic government. Therefore, it doesn't mean that we also need not come up with plans. We need to plan in order to get the country going. Then if we do not plan, we say that now, because coming up with this plan is that this election year is not correct. Elections will always be there, and we want to encourage the minister
that moving forward, you are still in the right track. Thank you very much. Thank you, Kosovo. Honorable Thomas.
Thank you very much, Chair President. And good morning, Kosovo. Yeah, Chair President, I also take this opportunity to thank the Minister for having clarified what is supposed to be a very sensitive matter. And also take this opportunity, Chairperson, to remind us that this government is facing a huge task of restructuring the public service, making it what it is today, rather than what it has been all along. Chairperson, I just want to find out from the Minister, what has been the impact and the psyche of the public servants after this allegation has been raised, and maybe also make mention of the manner in which it was handled at the public platform, as well as within the department itself, because it must have created a lot of uncertainty to our public servants. I just want to know what is it that we have done in that particular regard. And in your good attempt to get to the bottom of this alleged retrenchment, what has been the, what could have been the origin of such a communication? We know that it might have done deliberately, you know, like throw a javelin and then catch it forward. It might have been done deliberately so that it stabilizes, or it creates the uncertainty that fits to what some other people would call preparation towards the elections and so on. I would like to know what is it that could have been the origin of such. Could it have been the misunderstanding coming from somewhere, so that we gain an insight into this thing and maybe be able to deal with it at the board of court. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Tom Bernard, Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, but also thank you very much for giving me the time to actually clarify this matter, because it's been in the public eye for a long time. And as Honourable Imam rightly said, we seem to also be contradicting ourselves in the way that we are communicating the whole story. But in the Chairperson has rightly said that if other departments want to respond to issues like this, they should get the cue from the Department of Public Administration. And I think this is where things went wrong in the responses that we've seen so far. I think we have been very consistent in our response to this matter. Because, Honorable Tombela, I don't know where the story comes from. I have gone back to look at the cabinet recruiter document as presented by the Treasury. I've looked at the cabinet recruiter document as presented by myself to the cabinet recruiter. No one do we talk about retrenchment. No. We are told that the document was leaked from the National Treasury, which thing I am very careful not to believe, because even the National Treasury document that I have, which was presented at the cabinet level, does not talk about retrenchment. So the origin of the story, I truly, truly do not know. The allegation that it comes from the National Treasury, I also do not want to believe, because there is no document before me presented either to the ANC recruiter or to the cabinet recruiter that comes from the National Treasury that speaks about the being retrenched. There is no such thing. What I do know, as I said earlier on, is that when we were looking at reducing the wage bill, the National Treasury, together with the department, did do some scenario sketching and some modeling. But that as well has nothing to do with retrenchment. We never even thought about retracing when we were doing the modeling and the scenario sketching. So I honestly do not know what the origin is, and I'm not sure what the reason for this supposed leak is. But I can tell you that this leak is devoid of all truth. It is indeed a leak. On the macro configuration of the state and also the macro configuration of government, I think it's common knowledge that we have all come to the realization, or we've all come to a conclusion, that departments are not fully aligned, and also that we have too many departments. That the President spoke to in the State of the Nation address. Having said that, that should not cause panic as well, to say that people are going to lose their jobs because we have come to this conclusion. As I said, even if we were to reduce the numbers to much less than what we have now, we would still need more people. As I have said, there are certain areas where we really, really are short of critical skills, and positions have to be filled. Some positions, I would even dare to say, is that some positions might even have to be created, because in certain departments, we've looked at their structures. Some departments have sent their structures to us, some have not sent their structures to us. But if you look at the mandate of particular units within departments, sometimes they do not meet the mandate or the requirements of that unit department. So there's a whole host of things that we would need to be embarking upon. And I hear you on the timeline. We hope that by the end of October we'll be able to come back and present something that looks like a cogent timeline to effect some of these changes. But one thing that I must state up front, temper can be just not distract one another. One thing that I must say up front is that even in the Department of Public Service and Administration, we have a staffing problem. As I speak to you today, the DDG, who's responsible for human resource management, has been seconded to another department. The person that is supposed to be acting had to go in for emergency surgery, and she's not booked off until December. And this is the unit that's supposed to be dealing with all of us, which we're talking about today. So it's difficult, not just for the rest of the public service, but it's difficult for the department as well. We are filling jobs, but what I've said to staff is that there are certain things that we need to be doing very, very quickly. The collation of information and stuff like that. Where we have vacancies, because we all know that in the public service it takes about 4 months to fill a vacancy. That in between that time, let's bring in young people to come and do some of the work that needs to be done urgently. For instance, on data collation, you don't need rocket scientists. You just need young people who have studied in a particular sector, bring them in for that 4 month period for them to be able to put this information together. The second thing that I've asked the department to do is, when we talk about the 30.2 billion honorable fund about and the things that we think we're going to do as a department, and I feel that there are many other things that we should be looking at. For instance, the regular expenditure, which of course can be regularized through formulation by Parliament. But what about that which is not regularized? We would have to take different measures against individuals that are responsible. Our supervisors need, I almost missed a phrase, they need to I don't have to say grow again, but you know, they need to be resolute in the way that they handle and supervise people that are under their supervision. Because if you're scared to take disciplinary measures against people, then you shouldn't be a supervisor. So we would really need to look at things like this. Wasteful expenditure. I can't see how anyone could ever condone wasteful expenditure. And again, honorable Professor Bass, the problem is the supervisors that we have. They need to take action. The DGs need to take action against DDGs. That people alone and be comfortable with over expenditure, with wasteful expenditure, with irregular expenditure. And what I've asked the department to do is to say, with the money that we have that we're going to underspend on in the compensation of employees, family items, bring in experts that will be able to take care of all of this backlog of digital education. Bring in people that will go through all of our audit reports with a fine-tooth comb to determine where and where disciplinary action should be taken and where authority and responsibility lie. So the money is there for a short period of time, for about 4 months, whilst we haven't either advertised or we haven't filled these positions. But a lot of people in a period of 4 months can be done. We could be able to deal with the backlog. Where we have not appointed people and we have invoices not paid within 30 days, let's have people that are going to go into each department and look at those things and ensure that invoices are paid in time and clean all of the backlog. That is possible to do, but I think sometimes our managers and supervisors don't think at the level at which us as politicians think. And I used to say in the Department of Health thing that I headed at one point that people must think at the level at which they're at. And that's the problem that we think to experience. The cost of several strategies, I think I spoke to that a little earlier on as well. It is true that several strategies in themselves are very expensive. But is it something that we're willing to bite the bullet on for now so that we can stay for the future? I think that's true. And I think this is what has been leads to the meeting. That exercise that says this is what it's going to cost us to embark on a process of this nature. We are not looking to firing people or making people go because they are old. Ageism is not condoned by our constitution. But I will tell you that lots of people have called us to say, when is this being implemented? And as a caring government that needs to look into, first and foremost, the hopes and aspirations of the poor and the working class, we need to take the issue of youth unemployment very seriously. If we are not going to create work opportunities and employment opportunities for the youth, this is what we're talking about. That's not good. But secondly, if a child comes from a village in Madibin, and in that village that child is the only one that has gone to university but does not get employment, what does that say to other children in that village? That going to school is that there's no point in going to school. We're going to find ourselves with a nation of illiterate because school will not be fashionable because there is no hope. So what we're trying to do by this exercise, Honorable Fanagar, is to give that hope to those children that government is looking into bringing them on board. Not because we are cheap labor, but because it is fact that if you come in at entry level, you are going to be cheap. And we're trying to deal with this runaway cost, while also dealing with the issue of this ticking time bomb of a huge youth bulge that we're finding difficult to deal. The private sector does not create as much jobs as we would like it to, for various reasons. In the same way that for a lot of people in South Africa, the private sector and the public sector is their only hope, both for employment and also for business opportunities. And would like to come back and create those opportunities for all people, but not at the expense of the system. On the ministerial handbook, the ministerial handbook was finalized. The president is still looking at its consideration. But I must say that we are still bound by the old ministerial handbook. So there is no reason why I should have 18 staff in my office. The ministerial handbook is what binds me today. While the president has not signed off on the new one, the old one still binds me today, and I'm very clear on the number of people that should work in my office. It's also the same with the advisors. I mean, I've belabored the point so many times that it's becoming quite ridiculous. But it's not only on the number of advisors and people in ministering, deputy ministers' offices. It goes down to provinces as well. It goes down to municipalities as well. And because those people are already contracted, we cannot find them. But action needs to be taken. Action needs to be taken against those that have allowed a situation where we have more people than we require in the establishment. And I use my example, by the way.
That's why I've
attached
against your
previous system. On the timeline, like I'm saying, we are also short-staffed in the department, but we are going to bring in young people that are going to assist us with it is, of course, an election year, but I'm not guided by the elections. I'm a servant of the people. As for those who know me, I do not work on things on the basis of newspaper headlines, or on the basis of what time of the decade it is. I work on the basis of the fact that there's a job that needs to be done. And Honorable Kassim, you should take it from whence it comes. I'm doing this only because it is right, regardless of whether it's an election or not. Understanding the concept of big data is something that we all need to take ourselves to. The sources of big data, how this big data is disseminated, how it is turned into information for evidence-based planning is what I think every manager should have the ability to understand. That's why we're introducing a course on evidence-based planning. Steps SA cannot and is not our only source of that information. And I hear the issues that you raise, they're very valid. I can't take that away from what you say. But what I just wanted to highlight is that big data is something that we need to live by in the public. Because that big data, the many sources. For instance, if you're going to plan on spatial development, the building of roads and stuff like that, Uber is one of the companies that we should be aligning with, because they have data that could help us on road construction and stuff like that. So there are many, I mean, I see Uber today not as a transport company, I see it as a data company, you know, because of the data that it possesses. And I think we need to look beyond SA, much as I agree with you that it needs to be properly funded, because that's our first point of call. And we really need to understand the concepts and the services and the use of that information. I think I have answered everything on the macro configuration of the state, or the impact on public service. On Friday, Honorable Domino, I'm meeting with all of the ministers to deal with having a post-wage negotiation conversation, to look at implementation, to look at performance, to look at the whole host of things, including the 30,000. I mean, I've spoken to staff through Twitter, I've spoken to staff through platforms that have been created, just to make people comfortable to understand that there's no such a thing as the 30,000 retrenchment. And immediately after that, we started getting calls. How can we move? When can we move? How can we facilitate them? People really do want to move. But I'm very cognizant of the fact that we have to be very careful as to who is the answer. It shouldn't affect the delivery. It shouldn't affect the functionality of the state. So I've made it very clear to those that have made inquiries so far that we would have to judge each case on merit, looking into what the state needs right now, its functionality, but also the type of individual, because we would not want to lose the best performer, even if they're just administration. But we'd also not want to lose people who sit with scarce skills and move them to the private sector. So that meeting is happening on Friday. We'll be able then to give you those responses to that. But I must say, the Public Servants Association, whom I spoke to immediately after the story broke out, I called each and every union in the private sector, in the public sector. And I must say that the Public Servants Union came out, Public Servants Association, came out very, very supportive to a point where they went out on Facebook and I think it was all over Twitter as well to say they've had conversations with us and there's no reason to believe that. And I would also caution, and I cautioned Kosachi as well, I would also like to caution members of the portfolio committee, as the Honorable Kosa has said, that we don't always jump and believe what the newspaper says when we have a minister that is acceptable to all of us. The first point of call I would raise in close is that all of you should call me to ask whether there is any truth in any newspaper article that we see. Because it does cost that amount of time in our people. And not only those that are employed in the public service, but as you would know, that if one person is employed, there are many others that feed off the employment of that one individual. So the effect is not only in the public service, it's also the effect and impact is felt by our population in general. This government has gone out publicly to caution the private sector in retrenching huge amounts of people, as you would have known those stories about the mining sector. Now, it would be very hypocritical of us to lament the private sector and do exactly the same thing in even larger numbers as the private sector. So the very is not true in the story, regardless of what responses you would find from other quarters. And I just request that I be the only person that you listen to with regard to this work.
That's Minister Collins for that discussion. I think, Minister, we should take the discussion forward when we deal with the BRRR, so that you come with the figures as the members have said. If we are going to reconfigure or whatever term we use, and the voluntary surveillance package, all these packages, what are the cost implications? And the bloated civil service, what does it mean? Because it might mean something else to somebody else. Do we have more public servants than we need? And when, as against the vacancies that are there. So I think when we deal with the BRRR, you will also have the figures to say currently compensation of employees is so much. And why do we say the fiscal can't afford? Just something empirical, because it's something else just for me to speak without the facts. So if you can assist us with the facts when we come back, I think we're meeting 8, 9, 10 with the three, with all our institutions that account to us, DPSA institutions and DPME, dealing with the BRRR. Let's engage that time. What is the voluntary services package impact going to be financially? And as you said, we might end up losing, it might have unintended consequences of losing very key and critical skills. DPME last week reported that we have a problem of people when they shift into other posts, they end up even cashing on patients. You were there, Deputy Minister, you were not there. Yeah, DPME reported that matter. They didn't go into detail that we are beginning to have a problem when somebody moves from DPME to DPSA, he or she cashes the patient and use it to offset the loan, either the bond or, and they raise it as something that, wait. It's what the DG reported, isn't it? You were here. You were not here. That's what DPME reported, that in the long run, it's going to be a social security problem. Because if at my age, I'm 50-something, I'm not far from going to retirement, I haven't made the savings for pension, I'm going to be abandoned to the state when I leave here. So so we'll have to get those facts as to what does it mean. We get people who present, we listen,
but the department concerned must assist us with the facts. If what DPMB has raised is not factual, they will be coming back in 8, 9, 10. We'll ask them, this is the matter you raised. Can you expatiate? What are you, what were you talking about when you raised this matter? Also, I think by the time we meet on the first week of October, you will be done with the wage negotiations. We'll be interested to get the report as to how far are we, because that in itself will also have financial implications related to the subject that we are dealing with of the public service vis-a-vis the cost, whether the fiscals can afford or not. So that when we come out of that, we speak with facts, because we'll have empirical evidence of what we're talking about. But currently, this is what the public service costs. Is it affordable or not affordable? And this is what we're planning to do in terms of the VSP and a range of other programs which are there. So that would be critical, because we'll have enough time and we'll be dealing with budgetary matters. Thanks, members, for the engagement in that regard. We'll move to presentations. What are requests from those who are going to present? Dr. Mpiswa, you are an academic. We are not going to go through each and every item as they are. Just do an, you know, with an abstract. An abstract explains the whole thesis. I said this is 400 pages, but by mere printing the abstract, I understand what is contained there. And the same applies to Mr. Debe, Dr. Major, the DG, Ms. Clark, that we, in the interest of time, because we're dealing with the politics. This subject that we're dealing with was very critical. So now, when you come in, well, with respect, we have read the reports, but just deal with it in an abstract manner, that this is what is contained in the fourth quarter and the second quarter. Then if we have a clarity-speaking question, we'll ask those questions. So can you please do that, Dr.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Minister, Deputy Minister, and members of the Funa Committee, Chairperson of the Public Service Commission, and colleagues, good morning. Just to indicate to honourable members that during the fourth quarter of the 17-18 financial year, the Public Service Commission had 65 targets, and it achieved 61 of those targets. And I think that's what we have to bring to the attention of the fellow community. Also to indicate that because the fourth quarter is always at the end of the financial year, the Public Service Commission, as much as we come during the annual reporting period, got a qualified report with the findings. Perhaps just to indicate one achievement out of the list that you have seen on slide 4 and 5, Honorable Chair, because this one was solely coming from the portfolio committee that is put on the research and investigative work undertaken by the Public Service Commission. We achieved level number 2, a draft worksheet on the factors impeding government departments in achieving 2% with the people with disability and 50% of women in SMS. It was a product that the Public Service Commission conducted after the request by the particular portfolio committee, and the product was also presented to the portfolio committee. I think I would like to draw the attention of the honourable members to slide 7. I think slide 7 then talks about those targets that we did not achieve during the fourth quarter. And one is the one way we are saying that the Public Service Commission would not achieve the 1.8% of women, of people with disability and SMS in the senior level. In terms of women, we only had 1.8%. And at the women level, we have 48.9. and the efforts are underway as both the minister and the chairperson of the Public Service Commission or the commission at large has encouraged us to find creative ways that are sustainable to ensure that we respond to this. And one of them, particularly with regards to people with disability, is to ensure that when we do have contract workers or tenants that are living with disability, then we ensure that we absorb them where there are vacancies, and that we will ensure that accordingly. With regards to bullet number two is the slow progress with regard to the National Anti-Corruption Hotline cases. Instead of 75%, we achieved 71%. This is mainly because it is out of the control of the commission, because the departments that will take cases to, they're the ones that must finalize them and report the commission accordingly. And in this regard, they only reported 71%. With regard to finances, which will be the last aspect that I would like to report to regarding our fourth quarter report of the previous financial year, we just wanted to indicate that we spent 99% of our budget allocated. I think that's what was also leading us to getting a qualified report, and because even with the predetermined information, we achieved 93%. So in other words, in terms of our performance information and financial management, they talk to each other, 93% achievement and 99% achieved. Honorable Chair, if you agree with me, I will quickly move to slide 87. Slide 87 is the one that will talk to the first quarter of the current financial year. And I think on this slide, Honorable Chair, Minister and Honorable Members, we are saying to the committee that the Public Service Commission had 19 annual performance targets, of which 8 are quarterly targets and 11 are annual targets. And of the 8 quarterly targets, only 4 were due in the first quarter, which is the quarter that is under review. And all of these quarters have been achieved. And of the first quarter performance shows that we are on course in terms of achieving all of our quarterly targets and annual targets. And we also like to bring to the attention of the portfolio committee that with the remaining 2 annual targets, that is promotion of access to information, the Act of 2000, Section 50 notice, which then says departments on annual basis must report of all their cases where information was requested to human rights, it will be reported during the fourth quarter. Similarly, with regard to the appointment of BBB and BBE suppliers, they will also be reported during the fourth quarter. However, there are also areas that the Public Service Commission achieved which were not included in the APPs, and they are reflected accordingly in the respective branches. I think then I would like to draw the attention of the Honourable Members to slide 56, which will be our slide, last slide in terms of the Public Service Commission. This slide is the one that informs the Honourable Members that during the fourth quarter that we have just reported and the first quarter of 1819, there was no irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure incurred by the Public Service Commission. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DG. I confer to you another degree with cum laude. Your pain so precise and perpetual. Thanks very much. Honourable Members, let's engage with the reports, questions for clarity and comments.
Thank you, Chair. No, sorry, Chair. Can I kindly propose to the Honourable Members, if possible, if they do agree with me, that we get presentation from the PSC and the NSG, then we respond, as honourable, if they do agree, because those are just the entities of the DPSA. Then we take the DPSA separate if they do agree with my proposal.
Okay. Proposal NSG, CPSI, and DSA. Then we end up with DPS. That's the proposal.
Honourable Father.
Depending on time, because some of us said that we might have to leave early, and I think it's just appropriate while you are hot on the topic that you ask and get clarification on your
question. What are you?
I would say you can manage the time as the chair and say, okay, you'll take 5 questions on the topic and go, then we do the rest. Because some of us might leave before the end of all 3 and not get an opportunity to ask questions.
Okay. Any other comment on the suggestion of Honourable Tuazan?
Final call.
At the top left?
That's not the final call.
Okay. Okay, that's the suggestion. We can take that. It's not a problem. And if that's agreed to, the next one is the school, energy, where's the slide? The project.
Thank you very
much. Like your colleague, take you from the lot. You are an academic also. Do the abstract. They are dealing with academics. They understand what is abstract.
No, I'll do my best, Jefferson. I would like to propose, with your permission, to start with slide number 4. Slide number 4, the heading of that slide is Highlight of Performance Consolidated. That slide captures our story, Chairperson and honorable members, in terms of the fourth quarter performance, but also in terms of quarter one performance. You will see from the fourth quarter performance of the last financial year that we were able to achieve our training targets. We exceeded them by 102%. In terms of both Program 1 and Program 2, we are indicating to the committee that in Program 1 we achieved 6 of the 7 quarterly targets, and in Program 2 we were able to achieve 11 of the 15 quarterly targets. However, for our annual performance, because the fourth quarter is the last quarter of the financial year, our annual performance allowed us to achieve all our targets that we had intended for the year. So those targets that we are not covering in fourth quarter, we had dealt with them in the first 3 quarters of the financial year. We were able at the end of the financial year to raise 116 million, which we are sharing with the committee on that slide. The last conversation is on the first quarter of the current financial year, which is also on the same slide, Chairperson. You will see that we've been quite happy with our performance thus far. We have achieved most of our targets for the first quarter. If you look at the number of learners trained, we have exceeded our target in the first quarter. If you look specifically at the quarterly targets of the 21 targets, of the 24 targets that we have for quarter one in both program 1 and 2, we've been able to achieve 21 of those targets. And we're sharing that with the committee on that specific slide. Just to give the committee some specifics, if we jump through to the slide number 8, it gives us the quarter performance in terms of program 2 in the last quarter of the previous financial year. You will see, Chairperson, that in terms of the overall targets, the only area in relation to the number of learners trained that we didn't achieve the target was with regard to the compulsory induction program. But we've recovered that in the first quarter of this year when you see our performance with regard to the compulsory induction program. The detail of the different training streams are contained in this page that is in front of us. Our overall target for the last quarter of the previous year was 48,000, and we've been able to exceed that by training 52,000 learners. The finances, Chairperson, of the previous financial year, the last quarter, we share them with the committee on slide number 11, which is in front of us. we've been able to spend 99.8% of our total budget. The overruns that we're sharing with the committee are EU-approved overruns in terms of the donor project that we're running with the EU, which has subsequently been paid. If we then jump through to the first quarter performance in terms of the finances, you will see that the first quarter performance of this financial year in terms of our financial performance, we've been able to overall spend around 83% of the budget that we had planned to spend in the first quarter, and we're quite convinced that by the end of the financial year, Chairperson, we will have been able to spend the budget that we've been allocated for the year. Just to conclude, Chairperson, we share with the committee the trends in terms of the vacancy rate. You will see that from the fourth quarter of last year to the first quarter of this year, we've been able to reduce the vacancies from what was 10% in quarter four of last year. We're now standing at 9.2% in the last quarter of this year. We also are very happy that we've been doing well in terms of our performance with persons with disabilities and the stuff that we're sharing with the committee. Lastly, Chairperson, from the last financial year, we were able, with the audit processes, to be given an unqualified audit with findings. Thank you.
You, as a Chancellor, with the powers vested in me of NSG, I award you master's degree. I want a PhD.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Dr. Maji. Let's move to CPSI. May I have it?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Just was setting me up just to remind and for the benefit of our Honorable Member, Minister, Deputy Minister, and our Honorable Chair from Mozambique. The CPSI is that my. A small government component, a government department that focuses on entrenching and inculcating the culture and practice of innovation in the public service. It reports to the Minister for the Public Service Administration. In terms of our performance in the fourth quarter, I will, with your permission, Honourable Members, go straight to slide number 5, which shows that we had 15 out of 15 targets that we had, we were able to achieve and complete 13 targets. We lost out on 2 targets by the end of March, March 2018. And if we move straight to slide number 12, I just want to explain, to show you what are the two targets that we did not achieve. We have a program that focuses on pharmacy automation, and because of the queues and other challenges that are encountered in hospitals, instead of people going to queue up there, we are working with an NGO to install automation, like your bank teller machines, where people can go and get their medication. They are able to talk to the pharmacist if they need clarification or confirmation, but they can actually just get their medication from the donor. We had promised to pilot, because this has been piloted elsewhere in 2 other hospitals, Helen Joseph and Steve Biko in Pretoria, successfully where they are working. We then wanted to implement it at Chris Hani Paragwana's hospital, where they received at least 1,700 patients per day in the pharmacy. And we wanted to implement it there, but due to financial constraints, we needed 20 million. This is an NGO. We couldn't get that money, but we were able to go and implement at the Alexander Plaza, which was cheaper, and it was 6 million. So that is where we did not achieve. But we actually did implement, but in a different locality, not the one we promised. And that would be in the piloting, but on the next program, which is replicating, we wanted to replicate the teleradiology project between Mpumalanga and Nizi hospitals in Mpumalanga and Gauteng, because we successfully implemented it at Helen Joseph, between Helen Joseph and Rahima Musa Hospital, where Rahima Musa has access to radiologists at Helen Joseph, and they don't have to shunt patients across between the two hospitals for them to take x-rays and to wait for results and so on. The whole thing can happen within minutes. And we are really trying to implement it's robotics, although we don't realize that we are already implementing what is being shunted as the fourth industrial revolution or digital revolution. So we managed that, and we wanted to do it between Mpumalanga and Gauteng, but because of finances, again, they were not able to release, the Department of Health and Gauteng was not able to release the funding that was required. We are in discussion with them to try and get to implement this project, because it's very critical to get resourced hospitals or government institutions linked with under-resourced government institutions for citizens. And the revenue enhancement project, which was a great success driven by Treasury in Limpopo and assisting them in collecting a lot of revenue that was then able, they were able to use to address other gaps, service delivery gaps. And we wanted to replicate it across the entire province of Limpopo. We had problems getting the necessary approval. But just to assure the committee, the honourable members, that it has been done. We have managed to get all the CFOs and departments together with the, and we had the best practice presented to them, and as we speak, they are busy, the different departments are being implemented. So those were the two where we did not succeed. In terms of the finances, we had, if you look at program one, we were given 18.6 million and we were able to spend 18.3 million of that. So there was a difference, a variance of 300,000. And that was simply because there was a bit of delay in filling two posts, which we have filled. And so we had a little bit of a saving, just 294,000 rand. And the delays are understood when you fill posts because the number stops that the application, that the entire recruitment process has, including checking on the applicant and through the security in terms of their security validity. So we saved that money. If you come to program two, we were given 15.3 million and we were able to spend 14 million. So there was again a variance of 1.3 million. And again, because there was a delay in transferring an amount of 600,000 to the Innovation Hub, our partner that we work with to enable entrepreneurs to test and pilot their solutions, their service delivery solutions. There was a delay in the signing of the MOU between them, the Innovation Hub, and ourselves, and that is why this money, we weren't able to. The MOU has to be signed. It has been signed, and we're in the process of transferring some funding to them. But that is why we underspend on the 600,000. Again, the ICT procurement was stopped for some different reasons. But it has been, by the time after the reporting period, we're able to do that. Again, there were some savings. Around SMT, there was less traveling of the officials. I don't know if the timing is right. Okay. In terms of the payment, the 30-day restrict or restriction, we actually take 5.63 days to pay our suppliers or service providers. And in that period, 432 payments were processed. We are a small organization, I must say, and I'm happy to report that we received a clean audit for this year. If we move to the first quarter, we achieved 100% in terms of our performance, and so there are no issues around here. There's nothing for me to explain in terms of, because we achieved all our targets within this period. I will not take you through what we did in the interest of time. Thank you very much, Chair.
Why gender? Ah, gender.
Honor doctorate is a prestigious. It's a prestige. Not everybody can get an honor doctorate.
It's okay to tell.
That's why I'm awarding it to her. Yes, this power is vested in me as the chancellor of the NSG. Okay, thank you very much for your suggestion, Honorable Duwanzana. It has been very helpful. And the officials have been very helpful. So it's doable that people speak to the issues they have instead of going into details because we have spent the report. Honorable members, those are the three presentations. Maybe let's just quickly take one at a time. And we'll only take one round of questions on each, and then we'll move to DPSA. Let's first go to PSA, the first round of questions. Honorable Tom Vela, Honorable Van der Vaart, Honorable Ndau, who else? Honorable Teresha, in that order. Honorable Tom Vela.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thanks for the report. Sitting directly opposite to the teacher, I watched him when he was emphasizing the innovative and very sustainable and creative measures that they have taken to address the issue of the 2% for people with disabilities and 50% for women. I'd like him to share that with us. What are those innovative, or what are those sustainable and creative measures that you have taken, so that you take note of them and encourage other departments to adopt them as well. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Chair, we're doing PSC only.
Yes, and just one
I'm used to it now. I just thought if you do three presentations, you ask four, otherwise you can speak one by one.
Let's take one at a time.
Yeah.
I don't want to complete questions.
I just want to speak to the presenters.
Yeah.
Jay, to PSC, I've got two questions. The one is, recently there was a report earlier this year on the vehicles in the Free State government that were in accident. Submitted a question to the minister's office to hear if that will be done in other provinces as well. And the response I got, obviously via the province or PC, I don't know, was that there wasn't a need for it, was only for that one. Now my question is, I think it is really important to do it for the other provinces as well. I know they cash trapped, but I would like to know if that will happen, and let's start at our most rural provinces first before we get to Gauteng and Western Cape, which takes supposedly a longer time to respond. Thank you. And then I may mention also that I've got a case of PC that I know they are dealing with, and that there would be more interviews, but I also like to know when it's closed. You think that there is a structure or institution, I don't know what to call it, dealing with state capture, and that case is really relevant to that as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Honourable Fayadwaz, Honourable Mtao.
Thank you, Chair. Just a quick one. On slide 7, with regard to the summary of consolidated performance, quarter 4, second bullet point, the slow progress in the closure of the hotline cases, but where you achieved only 71%, has that now been finalized? The rest of the 29% of those cases been finalized?
Thank you, Honourable Mtao. Honourable Nivod, Tresham.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation from the PSC. Relating to Honourable Mtao's one question, mine's covered partially, the anti-corruption hotline. I just also wanted to know what is the reason for the slow progress of closing the cases? 29% has not been closed, so that's quite a big number. What is the reason for the slow progress? What is the PSC struggling with to ensure that the cases are closed? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, Commissioner, and teacher. Can you respond? And then the Minister will close so that we can move to NSG. We'll start with the Chairperson.
Teacher, can you start with the...
In our discussion with the commission and with the minister, because she was concerned about this principle, she was saying where we have intense leadership, we should ensure that those that have a disability, we ensure that instead of just releasing them after a year, the term expires, let's absorb them into the system where they are forced. So that will help us consolidate the issue of meeting the people with disability, which has been a challenge for the past 25 years. So I think government-wide, the issue is that concerted efforts should be made when we do a competitive selection, particularly of the intent and manner, that those that have got a disability, they can be even be preferred. So that we can be able to deal with this issue, because it has been a serious concern in government. It can't be something that for the past 25 years we have left. At least in the country, there are no people with disabilities. So the sustainable initiative that I'm referring to is to say those officials should be given preference. In fact, there was an understanding that where we can, we should be able to talk to people with disabilities themselves so that we can understand the challenges that they have with regards to entry into the public system. So I think it has to do with the building, with the working environment and so on, we can really find ways of dealing with that so that government is responsive to the needs and experience that people's ability in entering the public sector. That was the point we're referring to. I think with regards to Honourable Sanderbach, I mean, the Secretary will respond to that one. The one for Honourable Delma in terms of the slow pace. In many instances, when the Public Service Commission receives cases through the National Anti-Corruption Hotline that the public service has been mandated by the cabinet to manage, then many cases are referred to departments to investigate. But because of lack of investigative capacity in the department, departments take time to investigate them and provide feedback to the PSC for the PSC to consider and then be able to close. So that challenge is within the capacity of the department to be able to investigate and provide feedback to the PSC. It's one area that, again, is considered effort to even visit those departments by the PSC to establish those challenges so that the way there are challenges, PSC can even be able to assist. In some instances, the PSC investigates those cases itself instead of referring to them. So we hope that that can also contribute towards
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. One, the issue of vehicles in accidents and the abuse of government vehicles is countrywide and very serious. We have seen it in our disciplinary cases that happened in departments and provinces. I also can't even mention some of the provinces, but we will not.
this was forecast to interstate and dealt with and finalized. But I will take back to the Commission the request of the Honourable Member to see if it should, whether it can be extended and they can do it as an ad hoc project. I will take it back to check with the resources and availability of people to do that. But I admit that it is a serious matter and also a question of attendance, also abuse and use over weekend and things like that. I'm happy to report that the draft case, all the evidence has been collected and finalized. I expect to get a draft report next week, and all the witnesses, all of them, have participated and submitted the information.
Thank
you, Minister.
Just to add on the last point that was raised by Honourable Honourable,
I think as the public service commission also
needs
to be a little
more. That if an issue is brought to our attention, we need to determine the scale and extent to which it happens in across the country.
Yes.
So if it's reported in one province, you will be rest assured that it happened in other provinces.
Yes.
So we need just to extend it. On investigative capacity, that's one of the things that I was talking about earlier, that we would have to look at needs on critical credentials and retrain and recapacitate. For instance, if in my office I've got 40 people working in my office, those people should be retrained and given to the department with the money that you're paying them. Take it to other departments so that we have these skills that are required, the capacity that is required to do some of the work. The work that the Public Service Commission does is very important for us to be able to ensure that the system is functional, that we deliver to the expectations of our people, but we also have misuse and abuse of resources, whether it is money or people. We really need to speed up this process that you've spoken about the future and to have a positive policy.
Thank you, Minister. We've come to NSG. Are there questions or comments on NSG? Honourable Khosa. Honourable Sombela, Honourable Thunderbird, Honourable Russian, in such order.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation from NSG. Firstly, Chairperson, I just want to applaud the NSG for their target on people living with disability. I want to say that well done, keep it up. But I'm just worried, Chairperson, with regard the audit report. You know, with some other people, when you say they receive unqualified audit, they seem to be happy. With me, I'm not happy with unqualified audit. Because clean audit is practical. So I'm not happy with my daughter's score. I call unqualified audit my daughter's score. I'm not happy with that. I must indicate that really. What makes me unhappy is that the minor issues that need to be dealt with to go to clean audit. So let us improve on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. The National School of Government is fulfilling the mandate through the development of curriculum and rollout of training. The question is there any training course which is tailor-made to address the moral education for senior public servants, for public servants in general, in relation to how public money should be safeguarded and using existing financial legislation? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Honourable Thunderbird.
Chair, thank you. Just to the NSG, during the introduction this morning, the Minister spoke about some of the issues around irregular, well, wrongful expenditure. of employees that doesn't take that seriously. Now, in your program, are you really focusing on this, or you're just doing the basics? Because I sometimes feel that NSG is actually focused where we have the biggest challenges, and I doubt if we really are at all times. Why don't we focus where the money of the people is being wasted first, and make sure that everybody in a position dealing with that is properly trained so that they can actually be held accountable? What's the relationship there? Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Also, thank you to the NSG for your presentation. The training linked to youth graduates, you haven't met your target, I think 529 instead of 700 that were trained, plus the induction of 4,829 out of 6,900 and something. What is the reason for not fully achieving that target? And then the relationship between the NSG and the department to make sure that compulsory induction does happen. My second question is with regard to the local government training. I know previously, in previous presentations, they spoke about struggling to get local government on board, but the progress was improved. So I'm curious, what is the result, the final result of local government to make sure that they get training? How far are you in terms of that? Is it better? Has it improved? Or do you still have issues with this? The vacancy rate, yes, you have reduced it. Congratulations, that's very good. Just make sure that you keep on reducing it and don't go back over 10%. So how would you say the NSG would be successful in terms of keeping it at a lower percentage?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I would like to know, Chairperson, if it is possible that the NSG can also add and make it a priority within their induction programs, that any employees or individuals that are admitted in the public service, after they've gone through the orientation induction or the orientation program, is it possible that they can formulate another module, but this module to focus on ethics and etiquette of the public servant before they get admitted to department, and the department, which is going to be the DPSA, has to make it as a compulsory compulsory requirement.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I will begin with the Honourable Kosa. Thank you very much for your commendation in regards to the work that we're doing in relation to people with disabilities, if not in the House. Yes, we are also intending on the unqualified audit to make sure that the findings, the matters that the Auditor General has raised do not recur. And we do agree that they are doable in terms of making sure that they do not happen again in this current financial year. So we will ensure that for this current financial year, at least we don't just get an unqualified audit, but it does not come with the matters that the Auditor General has raised. They are fixable. We are working on both. There were only two matters raised by the Auditor General, which we are already attending to in this current financial year. With regard to the point raised by Honorable Ntombela, the issue of training on morals and safeguarding money, I would like to link our response to that question with the issue raised by Honourable Van der Waal on wrongful expenditure, and also the issue raised by Honourable Dlamini on the module on ethics. Mm-hmm. Firstly, that yes, we do have training courses that focus on issues of ethics, issues of anti-corruption, issues of wasteful expenditure. We do have courses that focus on those areas. And
I think the important point that the honourable members are raising is how can we ensure that the training courses that we have that focus on those areas can be prioritized so that they are given much more presence and emphasis. Mm. And in that regard, we are doing two things. The first thing that we've done is that we presented to the committee last year on what we call the funding model, and we presented to the committee in that regard on what we were proposing then to introduce as what we call compulsory programs and mandatory programs. A week or two ago, Cabinet has approved a list of mandatory and compulsory programs that we will be introducing in the next financial year. Amongst those courses, one of them is an ethics course, which Cabinet has now approved, and also a course on avoiding irregular, fraudulent, and wasteful expenditure, which Cabinet has also approved. So that's the one intervention. The other intervention, which we've been triggered by the Minister on, is which is raised by Honourable Dlamini, is how we can ensure that as part of our compulsory induction training, the training does deal with issues of ethics before probation can be conferred. The current program does include the issue of ethics training, but we deal with it in module 3 of the course and not in module 1 of the course, which results in confirmation of probation. And prodded by the Minister in this regard, we will be working with our colleagues in the department, which comes back to the second question that was raised by Honourable Nigo. We are working, we'll work with our colleagues in the Department of Public Service and Administration to move the module 3 so that it forms part of module 1 and becomes conditional for probation to be confirmed. We will have that discussion, and we are confident that we should be able to move in resolving that matter, working with our colleagues. Because as honourable members are aware, the compulsory induction program is the ministerial directive already. All the 5 modules are the ministerial directive. The only issue that is module 1 that forms part of probation confirmation. The last question raised by Honourable Nibold, I'll just deal with the two ones because I've managed to cover on the working relationship with the DPSA. The target on youth training, we in quarter 4, we missed the target because annually we had already exceeded it. So we achieved less in quarter 4, but annually we exceeded that target. The compulsory induction program, the honourable member is correct that in quarter 4 we were still not able to achieve our target with regards to the compulsory induction program, but we are happy to report that in quarter 1 we are able to recover that. We've achieved our targets with the compulsory induction and we've exceeded it, and we are hoping that the target that we've been working very closely with our colleagues in the Public Service and Administration Department to make sure that we continue to improve in terms of our performance. Local government training is also another area that the Minister has also been prodding us on, and it's an area that we will be increasingly focusing on in terms of the interventions that we'll be making moving forward. And so we will be paying more and more attention to improving on that area as prodded also by the Public Administration Management Act. And yet, Chairperson, through you, we intend to keep reducing the vacancy rate and hope that we can reduce it to not only below 10%, but where we can be below 5%. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Just to add on what the DG Chair said, on local government training, we have been approached by the Minister of COSTA to train at local government level, but also by the Minister of Public Enterprise, to also train in that sector. So we will be running our training program.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you much. Might don't change course content and curriculum in this meeting. The member, Honorable Dubazan, wanted to know whether there's a module on ethics. Not
say you must take it from course 3 to course 1, and it's not as easy as that. So if you offer a course on ethics, it's fine. But you are just giving yourself a target. When you come back, we'll say, but why haven't you changed the module from course 3 to? So just say, no, we offer and keep it like that. Don't overstretch yourself when you respond to questions. We will hold you to what you are saying. You get the point. It's on record. So just stick to what you have been asked. Thank you very much. CPSI, questions, comments? Well covered. Your motor is working.
No, you
stop and remember not to speak. Thank you very much, Ms. Kadele.
I've always liked to use this opportunity for family. There's a lot of work that happens in the Center for Public Service Innovation, and some of the work that we've done provides solutions to the health services sector and also provides solutions to other sectors, including the police. The only problem that we experience is an uptick. On the ones that she has mentioned, we have not been able to achieve the target, we need the target. Part of the problem is about that, the uptick. One would have expected that the health and government would have taken this one or two ATM type systems for dispensing of medicine to heart and actually put money into it, because it will save them cost in the long run. But it has always been a problem. And I'm wanting to suggest that as you do your oversight work, you should be able to call other departments to say, these are the things that are happening in the public service. What is actually good? Because we take a lot of time inviting individuals to come up with innovative solutions for service delivery. But when the uptake is zero, it also gives a fair amount of authority to the public.
Thank you, Minister. We acknowledge the good work done by CPSI in collaboration with the Innovation Hub. I know there are lots of young people there by Innovation Hub, Ms. Khatib, who are benefiting from that hub. So if the flow of money can be kept constant, the number of young people are coming with innovations. I met some from the Popo. Seemingly you give them how many square meters of an office with a small table, and that program is making an impact. So let's make sure that the flow of money between yourself and the app is constant. There should be no time when money doesn't get transferred. Because young people really need that app. And I think, Minister, we need more of the innovation apps. To which department? It belongs to DTI.
No, it belongs to the Housing Department of Economic Development. But it works with all the science parts, your HFRC, your CSIR, and the Department of Science and Technology as well. But it belongs to Housing Economic Development.
If that module can be rolled out to other provinces, I think we'll appreciate that. It's a very good innovation to have that hub. I met young people who come from my province who really appreciate it. And if it was there, they wouldn't be spending money staying in Pretoria on accommodation. But I'm not saying that we must take a decision here. I'm saying ideally, if the minister can talk to her colleagues of other provinces to look at that model of the innovation app and if they hold up. We are complaining of youth unemployment. You see, one thing that we must promote is youth enterprises. We can't always have every youth employed. Young people have got lots of innovations, and they should be assisted with those innovations to be marketed, and then we use their products.
sometimes. We only appreciate a young person when that skill is bought by Silicon Valley in America. This person is from South Africa, but you never appreciated that person until somebody came from America and took the young fellow. There are many young people with lots of innovation, and the Americans and the Japanese want to take them, and they say, no, no, we want to stay here, but we are doing not much to look after them. So that's a subject for another day. Let's move. Honorable President, you have decided not to make a contribution. Just a quick one before we go to the department. Ajah, Ulamun. After innovation,
thank you, Chair. And sorry, when you passed when you asked me for questions, I had my hand up, but you didn't see. I did want to ask CPSI a question. You can answer in writing. You don't have to answer now. CPSI, the payments that are within 5 days or less, is better than the 30 days waiting period. So whatever the good model for that you're using in CPSI should filter out to the other departments. Maybe it's an innovation that you have, or it could become an innovation, but I think other departments can learn from CPSI in that regard. So whatever it is that is your model to pay within, to make sure payments are done within 5 days or less, that should be filtered out to the other departments, please. Thank you.
Thanks. That was a comment. Thanks, Honorable Dreshen. I think when we meet DPME in 8, 9, 10, this is a serious concern. DPME and the treasurer, the 30-day turnaround period. SMEs are closing because of this problem. Big companies don't have problems. They can run for a year because there was lots of money in the reserve. Yeah, but for somebody who's a starter not to be paid for 30 days, they close.
Yeah.
You will not understand the impact unless it affects somebody who's closer to you, who's an SME. You supply t-shirts and stuff like that, and then I think you are not paid. You can't pay your suppliers and your designers. Then you are in trouble. So I think it's a model that I think when we meet DPME, we might want to invite you to that meeting to say what is the problem. Well, DPMG has been given the responsibility to monitor all the departments in that regard as suggested in the president. Thank you very much, the three agencies. Now we move to the department. The minister has made your life very easy, Madam Clark. She touched on a number of issues in her introduction. So we will go straight to quarter 4, quarter 1, these are the issues. And we engage in the discussion. Acting DG.
Thank you very much, Chief. Thank you, Honourable Minister, and good afternoon to you. I'll just focus on the two issues in terms of your request, Chair. The one is just the governance issues, which is Program 1. And the governance issues in terms of Program 1 will deal with the reporting in terms of the Public Service Act and the reporting in terms of PFMA, and then I'll deal with the program reporting for Program 2 up to Program 6 for the two courses. So just in terms of the Public Service Act related matters for DPSA, the compliance rate in terms of the disability is sitting at 2.4, which is at least 0.4% above what the national norm is and the national standard is. For the purposes of women in management positions, we're sitting at 42% at an SMS level, and we're sitting at 52% at an MMS level, which is a feeder level. For the purposes of the vacancy rate, we currently, on the current organogram, we're sitting at 14.07%, but in terms of the identified post for abolishment due to the reduction in the compensation budget, that would be reduced to 5%. So that is the HR governance related matters. For the finance governance related matters for the previous financial year, for the vote, it was 98.6% of the vote was spent, of which a large portion of the votes are transferred payments to the other components within the portfolio. But for DPSA as an entity itself, the expenditure was at 95%. We did get an unqualified audit with one matter of emphasis, which we are dealing with. For the purposes of the current performance and the historical performance, for the historical performance, we had 34 targets that had to be met. Of those, four were met, and I'll just speak to the four that weren't met. But for the first quarter, we had 29 targets, of which four also weren't met. Now, in terms of the interventions for those that have not been met and the reasons why, for the previous financial year, what we were dealing with is there were some changes in relation to the modalities for the white paper, and clearly those have been addressed because there's all these new things in relation to the digital government that we have to be looking at and were included. The other aspect was, which has been achieved subsequently, the Greater Good Recruitment Program, which was launched already. It was approved by both Cabinet as well as the Minister, but at the time it was work in progress. Those have been achieved. For the salary negotiations, the concept document in relation to the strategy, that had been only concluded in April of this particular year. You know that we successfully concluded the negotiations in the first week of June. The one that is still outstanding from the previous financial year, which then would only be the one, would be the report, the composite report around the 20,000 youth in terms of the learnership internship and the artisan program. We're currently compiling that particular report. So for all intents and purposes, that is the only outstanding one from for the purposes of delivery. For the first quarter, for the four that had not been achieved, we have got the... Sorry about that. That should be slide... Yeah. The slide at the top is slide 32. For the first quarter, for the 29 targets, the four that hadn't been met are the following. The strategic framework, the consultative process has been ongoing, and as the Commission advisory indicated, they have been dealing with the issue of the values and the principles, and there is quite a close correlation between the indicators and standards that have been developed by the Office of the Public Service Commission. But from our side, it is the norms that have to be developed. So there's a reconciliation in terms of the processes. And as we are talking today, there is a meeting with the Commission to conclude the outstanding work that needed to have been done in the first quarter towards this particular target. For the purpose of the other target, we had the aspect of the number of disciplinary cases. There had to be a data analysis done. That is still work in progress with regards to the information that had to be sourced from herself. And the report has been concluded, and it's on its way for approval. For the third one that has been outstanding, it is dealing with the standards, for the Batopila standards. And the Batopila standards are what has been measured against the tool that we had designed as the DPSA, and the following provinces that had participated. Now, the issue is the data to be submitted from these particular provinces and how they have implemented these, and this has only been concluded recently. For the last one, the PALMA has got a provision where we have to come up with the modalities for the services centres, for the maintenance and for the governance arrangements around the services centres. And sorry, I'm looking at the wrong slide. This was dealing with the sorry, this is the ACRM second generation review process. That has been postponed, and clearly I think the minister can assist with regards to the processes, because I haven't been involved in those with regards to the ACRM to give more detail in relation to those particular issues. I apologize for that in relation to that guest speaker. Yeah, so those for all intents and purposes are the non-deliverables for the first quarter, and the ones that were not delivered in the financial year. Thank you.
Oh, the same thing. Kumula again, a bonus. At the end of the year. Thanks very much to the collective leadership of Tukese for the presentation and the acting teaching. Thanks, Honorable Duwata. There was a presentation from TPSA. Let's take questions. And then, she has put you under the spotlight. They
prepared.
I really
don't know why, because she should have prepared for this.
Okay. Minister, APRM.
Most countries that have acceded to the Africa peer review mechanism do not have second generation reports done during an election. Because of the amount of time that it takes on consultation with various stakeholders, but also the money that are involved in the process, we always steer away from that. I'm not sure how it got to an APP in the first place. So we have decided together with the APRM that we will stay this process for after the election.
Thanks, Minister, for the clarity. Are there clarity seeking questions and comments on the DPSA? We'll start from extreme Honorable Treasurer, Honorable Tao, Honorable Van der Waart, in that order, Honorable Kosse. Honorable Treasurer.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, DPSA, for your presentation. Linked to internships, learnerships, or apprenticeships, to 20,556 altogether. So how many of those could be absorbed into employment after the training? And then page 43, relating to housing, we see 357,651 employees who are not owning houses. So we have a concern or a problem about that, because the public servant, if it's impossible to get a housing, maybe the bank requirements are too stringent, or I mean, there could be various reasons, but there's 5.2 billion accumulated to date in the savings. So is there any way that the department can assist our public servants that they can be able to own their own houses? Is there any way to assist them? And page 55, in relation to prohibition of public servants doing business with the state. I must hear in the report that it says 692 officials were conducting business with the state, and out of the 692, only 4 are in official capacity. So what does that phrase mean? What happens to the rest of the
600
odd members. Thank you.
That's all. Thank you,
Honorable Trishan. Honorable Mtao. Thank you very much, Chair. On slide 16, something that sort of will get back to me in terms of the learnership, that sort of dovetails with what honorable member was referring to, the internship center, as the reason for the variance, in other words, why you couldn't conclude what you were doing, you say that the lack of human capacity to gather, capture, and validate data from departments. Is the lack of human capacity on the part of the DPSA or on the part of the departments? And whichever answer you give, what is being done to ensure that this capacity is there so that this information can be captured? Because we need it. We need to make sure that the young people get into those positions.
Thank you, Honorable.
Okay, thank you. I'm just curious to ask, in difficult and the specific presentation, but is there some way a monitoring tool to see how many, especially amongst our senior managers or public servants, are serving on the boards of entities? We've seen, Chairperson, that there is now a hike in this. I'm not sure if people are building their CVs or what, but more and more people are required to serve on boards. And if there is any indication on that, thank you.
Thank you, Honorable. Thank you, Chairperson. What I wanted to raise is covered by my team.
Thank you very much, Honorable Cosmo. At the club, let me respond to
Thank you, Honourable Members. I'll start with the last one. We don't have the exact data with us now, but there are instances where the legislation expects the minister to appoint officials from that particular department to sit on particular boards. And we'd have to give you the data in terms of which particular legislation indicate the argument's sake in terms of GEMS, in terms of the pension fund, in terms of the CETA Act. Those various ministers have to appoint people from the mandate, the policy mandate department to sit on those boards. The other question around the lack of human capacity, I think an earlier response that the minister had given in relation to us resolving that is bringing in youth to assist us with the capturing. So it's more at our level in terms of the compilation of what has been brought in, but there are challenges in line departments indicating exactly the same, because of the nature of the collection of that particular data. For the purposes of the four officials, the legislative framework does allow in certain instances, which is delegated to various sectors. For example, the health sector would indicate under what conditionalities people that are recruited by the health sector are then allowed to offer services to that particular sector. But the conditionalities are determined by the different sectors in relation to that. For the purposes of officials that are continuing to do business, the directive is very clear that disciplinary action has to be taken by the relevant department against those particular individuals because they are violating a particular prescript. For the purposes of the question around the 357,000 public servants that do not have housing, I mean, one of the strategies is now to look at the state guarantee provision as collateral to public servants. For the purposes of addressing them being able to acquire housing. That used to be a provision, and you do remember fell away. And clearly it has to be state funding, and with the seed funding of the 5.2 billion, clearly that would be one of the options. And also conversations with the pension fund is underway for the purposes of the collateral. The old collateral for the state guarantees was with the pension fund anyway, so it would be exactly the same sort of formality. But there are other creative issues that have been put on the table to look at assisting public servants in terms of acquiring houses. For the purposes of the internship learnership report, we would be able to give you the data in writing at a later stage because the report clearly should be indicating the number of people who have been absorbed in the department. But it is a common situation where people who did come in various learnership and internship programs to get formal employment through the formal recruitment process. But one of the things that has been put on the table, especially to address persons with disability, is how do we have a policy that if that is an automatic source of individuals who can be employed into the public service and they are getting it through the internship learnership program, that we need to have a policy in terms of direct recruitment specifically for persons with disabilities. But that clearly is going to be a policy matter that has to be concluded, and also what are the creative ways in relation to lower entry level recruitment of individuals into employment and not into middle management positions, and that would assist with the challenges that we're having with our entrance into the workplace. Thank you.
Thanks, TJ. Those were the questions. But in regard to housing, Human Settlement also has a program called Social Housing. They try to address a situation like teachers, nurses, police, who we find when they are in big cities can't get, don't have collateral, and the banks don't give them a loan for a house. So there is a scheme in Human Settlement in Social Housing where they look at that category of people who can't manage to secure loans. So get more information. I know they're spending a lot of money in that regard in big cities to try to address that challenge. Thanks very much. Deputy Minister.
Thanks, Chairperson. Just to add around the internship program, or internship programs that are supposed to be running across government. And maybe this actually also just goes to skills building initiative that connects to what the Minister actually indicated earlier, which is actually also addressing the whole issue of coming back in terms of really looking at the extra 30 billion that we need to actually manage to deal with. Today, with internship, apprenticeship and learnership programs that are running across government, we also need to put much more emphasis on especially apprenticeship, so that you know there's entrepreneurial skills in order for youth in particular that are not getting job opportunities in South Africa to be in the position to begin to also focus on developing business for themselves, because we have a huge backlog in terms of creating jobs for South African youth, and government has actually done so much as to try and create jobs for the youth. And the President has launched the Youth Initiative, as you know, Chairperson, which is supposed to create about 1 million jobs for youth, both in private and the public sector. And then also, the Prime Minister has just launched the Graduate Recruitment Program, which is going to be focusing on getting graduates that are not employed in order for them to be provided with opportunities for training that we are hoping will actually manage to culminate in jobs or creation of jobs for them within the public sector. On the issue of the government employee housing scheme, we just launched the advisory council for the government employee housing scheme. We are hoping to manage to make movement along those lines in terms of the making available especially housing that you're actually talking about for middle class that is not in the position of, I don't know what to call it, for the minister, so that the ones that don't actually qualify for RDP housing and find it difficult for them to actually raise loans to buy houses, especially when it comes to professional teachings like police, like nurses. We are actually now currently depending on the kind of allowances that the government employee housing scheme makes is available. And the allowance actually also have got the savings scheme, which we're actually hoping that we'll manage to really provide a base for the kind of loan arrangements that will be provided. yeah, thank you. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks,
Deputy
Minister. We have almost come to an end of our agenda. Let me thank the Minister, the Deputy Minister, members, and our colleagues from Mozambique, Chairperson. Thanks very much for visiting us. We believe at some stage we'll also reciprocate to come and learn your system. We learn from one another. It does not mean that we are the best, but you learn something from us. There might be something that you are strong in, and we can also learn from you. So you are only welcome again. We will have or a cocktail, or what is it that we're going to have? Sphinga lunch is when you have snacks and cold drink. It's proper food, no sugar meat. Okay. So we'll break for 30 minutes. I will rush to another meeting with the chairperson of PSC and then come back later. So we'll meet again here for lunch at 1 o'clock. Yeah. Thanks very much. The meeting is adjourned.